This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids. We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing. Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. Imagine that your kids are fighting over who's going to get the last piece of French toast. The baby is crying and you haven't had your coffee yet. You're worried about your in-laws coming over later and you haven't even thought about what to make for dinner. Oh, and the house is a mess. As you feel your stress rising, there are choices to make. You could yell at the kids, ignore the baby till you brew your coffee, ask for help if someone's around, or take a few deep breaths and return to what you've come to understand as mindfulness. As you calm down and look around, you let go of the worries of your relatives and the state of the house. You pick up the baby, sit down with the kids, ask them to stop a minute, and help them solve the French toast dilemma. Then you brew yourself a delicious cup of coffee and think about what you really need to get done. Is that what you would do? I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. When you're raising a family or teaching students, it's often hard to be aware of what you're feeling, experiencing, and thinking. The practice of mindfulness or paying attention with kindness and curiosity can decrease stress and burnout and increase empathy and effective communication. It's also something that you can teach your children so they can have the tools they will need to de-stress and navigate the world they live in. Today, we'll talk with you about mindfulness. Joining me is Dr. Amy Saltzman. She's a holistic physician, mindfulness coach, and scientist, and the founder of The Still Quiet Place. She's recognized by her peers as a visionary and pioneer in the fields of holistic medicine and mindfulness for youth. She's offered mindfulness to young people from preschoolers to college undergrads in socioeconomically diverse schools and community settings. She's conducted two research studies evaluating the benefits of teaching mindfulness to child-parent pairs and to children in low-income elementary schools. These research projects were conducted in collaboration with the Department of Psychology at Stanford University. Dr. Amy Saltzman is trained in internal medicine as well and is a founding diplomat of the American Board of Holistic Medicine and founder and director of the Association for Mindfulness in Education. She also has a private practice providing holistic medical care and individual mindfulness instruction to children, teens, and adults. And we have a few of her CDs to give to callers this morning. Dr. Amy Saltzman, so glad you can join us.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you.
Hi, Amy. Great to have you with us this morning. And maybe you could start off and explain to people how you talk about mindfulness for, you know, perhaps to your clients or to the people you work with in the schools, and what you've seen also in your research and years of experience about the benefits for the entire family.
Okay. So when I'm talking to children and teens, and the more I teach to children and teens, the more I use the same language with parents, teachers, and healthcare providers, because the language is very simple and mindfulness is really based in experience. So my definition of mindfulness is simply paying attention to your life here and now, so we're not in the past or in the future, with kindness and curiosity, so that you can choose your behavior. So in your lovely example that you gave at the beginning of the show, it's being aware that you feel stressed and harried and not quite sure what to do, and not beating yourself up for that. So that's the kindness and curiosity part, simply noticing with kindness and curiosity. And then taking a deep breath and choosing what you want to do and what you want to do next and how you want to respond to the situation. That's mindfulness, the example that you gave. And my research shows, we'll start with the parents, that when parents practice this, they are more mindfully aware, they are better able to orient their attention, so they get to choose where they put their attention. They are more self-compassionate, and my favorite piece of data on this one is that they have what's called increased parenting self-efficacy. So they feel that they are more effective as parents when they practice this. So that's the parents. If we move on to teachers and healthcare professionals, the proven benefits of mindfulness are that people have decreased burnout and decreased compassion fatigue, and again, increased efficacy and empathy and compassion. And so those are the benefits for adults. And then there's some really great studies that show it enhances immunity and it enhances the activity in the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of our brain that's associated with positive emotion. So those are the benefits.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why being able to breathe easy and reduce our stress hormones. So, you know, if we can reduce that cortisol we often talk about, then it's going to help us both emotionally, physically, you know, for people, some people spiritually. But I really also think what you said is very important. I want to go back to the idea with parents that it increases their sense of, I'm doing a good job. I feel competent, the self-efficacy, because parents feel very insecure. I know I did. Like, I don't know how to do this, and my kids are always surprising me with things. And I think when parents can feel calm and that they're okay, what they decide to do then in response to their child is going to come from a place that's different than that reactive place. And so everything is going to go better. So I really think that's an important part.
Right. And the distinction that we talk about in mindfulness is the distinction between reacting, just doing something out of habit and probably out of frustration and moving very quickly, and responding, which is that action that comes from taking that one breath or three breaths, and then choosing, okay, it's a little crazy in here right now, and really, what's the most effective response that I can participate in this moment?
Right. And also the piece you said about teachers, they often suffer from what you said was compassion fatigue. And we know what a strong impact teachers have on our child's life. I mean, teachers, you know, definitely never get paid enough, don't get enough credit for all the terrific things they do. But also when the teacher is feeling stressed, burned out, not compassionate, frustrated in their own life, they really have an impact. You know, they're very contagious in that way, in their state of mind, in their mood. So for teachers to learn about mindfulness and increase their compassion will have a really important impact on our child's life. So I think that's a really wonderful place to start here. And what I'd like to do, Amy, is I'm going to open up the phone lines. Call us this morning, 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-5437. Call us if you don't know much about mindfulness and want to understand it more, if you'd like some practical tips, or if you've had experience yourself and how it has impacted your life, how it's made a difference. I know for me, I wish I knew about this back in the day when I was in my early 20s, you know, when I first started having kids. And I've learned over the years how much my state of being affects everything, and I've learned how to breathe and slow down a little, even though I still go pretty fast. So let's start off with our live line this morning. We have Sarah from Richmond with us this morning. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning, Rona.
Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you. This is just a wonderful topic, and I'm so glad you're addressing it. I guess I want to say that I have had a meditation practice and valued mindfulness for many years. And when I had my son, who's now six, I was really shocked at how much it kind of undermined the practice that I felt mm-hmm. I had. I mean, nothing tested my ability to be patient
right.
more than having a child. And
yes.
so my question, it's not so much really a question, but it's around just discussing the idea of how do you, in that moment when you're faced with you know, conflict or maybe something that's very intense happening, and you just don't have the skill set.
Yes.
You need and that's something that I've also learned, that it's taken me 6 years. I still don't really feel like I have that great a skill set, but it's taken me a while to develop what I have.
Yes.
So in that moment when you really, really don't know what to do, and your response is to your child is maybe like, I don't like what you're doing, but I don't know what to do
That's
about
right.
it.
That's right.
That's a truthful response. I guess I'm curious, even beyond just the breath, taking a couple breaths, anything that you...
Yes. No, this is a great question. And I just wonder from you, Sarah, since you realize that although you had a practice, it's very easy to sit and meditate when nothing is going on. Not that it's that easy, but it's very different than trying to bring that into everyday life as things are happening to you all the time, whether you're, you know, driving or your kids are around or you're watching TV. So I think it's a wonderful question. I'm just curious, before I go to Amy, I'm wondering if you've noticed anything that helps you since you've been struggling with this for 6 years. Is there anything that you've noticed makes a difference?
Well, I guess the one thing is that I do have to slow down and maybe try to step away, although that can create anxiety in my child when I do that. But, you know, like if I say, well, you know what, I need to go in the bathroom for a minute
yes.
and take a break, like, you know, just remove myself. I don't like what you're doing, or you can't speak to me that way, and I'm going to walk away
uh-huh.
if you do that. To me, that's the safest way to respond.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the other thing would be if I'm really upset and say, you know, you need to go, you need to be in your room right now. Or if he's upset and having a reaction really big.
So you found that sometimes you need the separation in order to get yourself back when you've kind of lost that sense of self. So I think that's what a lot of parents do. And let me see now how, Amy, Dr. Saltzman, how you work with parents around this.
Well, I think the first thing is to have some compassion for how incredibly challenging parenting can be. And I think one of the places where we get stuck and maybe even a little bit paralyzed is in this thinking of, I should know what to do, or if I was a good parent, I would know what to do in this moment. And that simply noticing that type of thinking, again, with this attitude of kindness and curiosity and maybe even a sense of humor, can help a lot. And then in preparation for the show, Rona and I were talking on Friday about a very simple practice that anybody, a parent, a child, a teacher, can do. And this particular practice is what I call three breath practice. So the first breath is for yourself. So it's simply, what's going on in here? What am I thinking? I'm thinking I should know what to do. What am I feeling? I'm feeling really frustrated. You know, what's happening in my body? I'm tense. I'm all my energy is kind of in my head. You know, my muscles are tense. I'm a little bit agitated. And then the next breath is, what's going on in this case outside of me and particularly focused on my child? Is he hungry? Is he tired? You know, did he already have some other upset earlier in the day? What is he trying to tell me with his behavior? And the last breath is for now what? And going to the bathroom and doing the whole thing over again is a totally great now what. Sometimes the wisest thing we can do is take a little space, and hold our tongue until we're clear.
I call it zip it. I tell parents, zip it for a minute. Hold your tongue. That's really important, Amy.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can also say, as you get more comfortable with this practice, you can almost do it out loud in front of your child and say, okay, I'm going to take a breath for me. Here's what I notice is for me. Now I'm going to take a breath for you. Here's what I notice for you. Now I'm going to take a breath for now what? And they can start to learn it too. And I have a lovely story from a woman who took up mindfulness and parenting class with me, where we were talking about patience. And one of the things I talk with parents about patience is, you know, we're trying and trying and trying to be patient, and then we kind of snap.
Yeah.
And if you can notice that place where your patience is running thin and where you're getting close to snapping before you snap, it's a whole different conversation. So this woman described where she told her kids that her patience was the size of a pea. And it became this household joke because they would say, Mom, how's your patience? What size is it? And she'd say, oh, it's the size of an orange, or it's the size of an elephant. But everybody had the information that they needed to adjust their behavior, to choose their behavior. When they knew that Mom's patience was the size of a pea.
See, that's what I love about that, Amy, is that you're sort of admitting to your children that I'm working on this. You know, I'm learning how to be calmer and more responsive and not yell so much or not be so reactive. And for a 6-year-old, Sarah, for your son, you can teach him these things too. And I think that's a really wonderful thing to do. I know that, you know, my friend Christine Carter, who does a lot of this work, you know, she'll turn on music. And I've done that with my kids, too, and say, you know, when we're feeling a certain way, let's just turn on these songs we love and let's dance for a minute until everything calms down. Now, that doesn't always work in the moment. But you're on the right track, Sarah, with taking the time to come back to yourself. And you know what that feels like when you are in that more calm space. And then you could teach your son about this as well. And Sarah, I'd like to send you a copy of the CD that Dr. Saltzman has. It's called A Still Quiet Place, Mindfulness for Young Children. There may be some things in there that would make a difference to you. We're also going to be having someone on this show later on, Dr. Michelle Bailey, and her book is Parenting Your Stressed Child. So if your child is often feeling stress himself, this is also a book for mindfulness-based stress reduction practices for your child. So we can send you a copy of that as well. Sarah, I hope that's helpful to you.
Oh, it is. Thank you so much. It's great to just realize that you can do things differently than you think you have to act a certain way as a parent, but it really turns everything on its end.
Yes.
Look at it as, you know, you can be very creative.
Very creative. Keep listening, and thank you for calling in this morning.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're talking about mindfulness, and it's really interesting. Again, it's not based on any religion. It's for anyone, and it's a way to come back to your body, to your breath, to the moment, let the past go, let the future go, and just look around in the moment, see what's happening, and it will really help you yell less, be more compassionate, and we'll keep talking in a minute about the other values of mindfulness. In a moment, we'll take your call.
And get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Free child care business workshops are being held at the Child Care Council in Richmond, Thursday, October 13, 6 to 9. The free sessions are aimed at the entrepreneurs who are looking to start their own child care businesses. For more information, call 925-676-5437. That's 925-676-5437. Mark your calendars for the next dance-off at Dance Out Diabetes at the Y in San Francisco, Saturday, October 29, 1 to 3. Salsa, hip-hop, and more while learning about coping and preventing diabetes. For more information, call 877-765-4386. That's 877-765-4386. Looking for a reading tutor? Well, the Jewish Coalition for Literacy is having tutoring sessions in their offices in Oakland, Sunday, October 16, 10 to 12:30. For more information, call 510-318-6474. That's 510-318-6474. Community Free Day at the Seymour Marine Discovery Center in UC Santa Cruz is this Tuesday, October 11th, all day. For more information, call 831-459-3800. That's 831-459-3800. Enjoy a prehistoric day with the family at the Lawrence Hall of Science in Berkeley for their Dinosaurs Unearthed exhibit, open daily 10 to 5. For more information, call 510-642-5132. That's 510-642-5132. Bring the family along for the world-famous Popovich Comedy Pet Theater, which will be held at the Rio Theater in Santa Cruz, Thursday, October 13, 7 to 9. This SPCA benefit show will include animal tricks, comedy, and world champion juggling. For more information, call 831-423-8209. That's 831-423-8209. And check out the ongoing free daily exhibits at the Intel Museum in Santa Clara. Learn about the history and future of computer technology. For more information, call 408-765-0503. That's 408-765-0503. For additional information on events, call 510-663-5437. And to submit information, email info@childhoodmatters.org.
This is Nurse Rona with news for parents, providers, and everyone who cares about kids. Childhood Matters is now podcasting. So many people have told me they love our show but can't listen on Sunday mornings. Now it's easy to get our shows on your iPod or MP3 player and take us with you. Sign up for podcasting today at childhoodmatters.org. And if you or someone you know speaks Spanish, click on the Nuestros Niños logo and learn about our sister show in Spanish with Dr. Marisol.
We all aspire to live happy and fulfilled lives and raise our children with these values. But the stresses we face day to day can get in our way. Find support with Nurse Rona's podcast, Happiness Matters, with Dr. Christine Carter, author of Raising Happiness, where you'll learn about the science and art of cultivating these values and passing them on to the children in your lives. This podcast is available on our website or on iTunes. For more information, visit us at childhoodmatters.org.
Continue with Childhood Matters.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Joining me today is Dr. Amy Salzman. She's a holistic physician, mindfulness coach, scientist, and founder of The Still Quiet Place. We're talking about mindfulness, and I hope fathers who are listening will call in as well this morning, 1-877-372-KIDS. Mindfulness is a way for us to move in the world where we're more aware of our body, our thoughts, our feelings. And I think one of the key things Amy said earlier is that it's kind and loving and compassionate. I notice that when I observe myself, and if I'm hard on myself, I will stop looking. So you want to be really kind and say, ah, here I am clenching my teeth and getting ready to yell at my kid. Maybe I can do something different. Amy, we're going to play a segment now from a teacher at Park Day School. And after you hear it, I'd love you to comment also on what you've heard from this teacher. So let's take a listen to Meena Srivastava, and she's going to talk about mindfulness.
And just bring awareness to your breathing and notice what happens to your belly as you inhale and as you exhale. And just take 5 breaths on your own. And this is your time to relax. We're so busy in the school day, so it's important to take time to stop, come back to ourselves,
Lorenzo Plazola, associate producer here, talking with Mina Srinivasan from Park Day Middle School about mindfulness. What inspired you to begin a mindfulness program for the youth?
Well, I myself am a practitioner, and I've seen how mindfulness practice has transformed my life, and seeing how it's made my life so much more joyful and meaningful, how could I not bring it to my students?
I know you have a Buddhist approach towards mindfulness, so what specific Buddhist values are the core of your program?
I'm Buddhist, but I don't, you know, what I do with my students is very secular. And the foundation of mindfulness is ethics, and these ethics based on interconnection, interdependence, or what my teacher Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing. So the values really are universal, and they're one of seeing how deeply interconnected we are and how our actions and words affect others. And just the mere bringing awareness to how we're behaving might affect others can really have a strong impact on making the world a better place. It's about transformation, peace in oneself, and then peace in the world.
And what are the benefits and actually what are the results that you see from teaching mindfulness to the youth?
I think mindfulness has really helped them in their social emotional development, for sure, and how they deal with conflict. For a number of students, just instructing them on how mindful breathing is a trick they can use to bring their mind and body together to establish them in the present moment has been tremendously helpful. So I start every class with, okay, your body's here, but is your mind here? And then we do some mindful breathing. And it really sets the tone for the class where students are much more attentive and focused. And oftentimes I'll invite the bell periodically throughout the period as well, just to make sure we check in and come back to ourselves.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Thank you, Lorenzo. And thank you, Mina Srinivasan and Park Day School. Dr. Amy, good stuff, huh?
The point that Mina made, which is mindfulness and compassion are innate, natural human qualities. And one does not need to be anything in particular, Buddhist or otherwise, to practice them any more than one needs to be Italian to enjoy pizza. So these are very natural qualities that anyone can cultivate. And I think the beautiful thing about what she was saying is that the students are practicing and she's practicing with them, and that really sets the tone for the classroom. And to have everybody's bodies and minds present and ready to learn,
yeah,
is a truly amazing thing. And it sets the foundation for a period or a day of learning and cooperation and wise choices in the classroom, on the playground. And that's what makes a difference to our children and their education.
That's right. And, you know, I was just reminded of the, you're doing a conference next week. Tell us a little bit about it. And we're going to give away a free ticket for this conference. Tell us when it is so that if people are listening and they want to learn more about how this is used in education and used with teachers and students.
So this conference is the Mindfulness in Education, a Foundation for Teaching and Learning. And it runs next Friday, October 14th, through Sunday the 16th. And if people want to learn more about it, the website is mindfuleducation.org. And for the people who don't get the free ticket that you're about to give away, if you type in the code JOINUS, one word, JOINUS, all in lowercase, you'll get a 25% discount.
Oh, good.
On the ticket price.
Okay.
And the conference is really designed for teachers, administrators, healthcare providers, parents, community workers who want to bring these skills to youth. And there's a whole movement in this country to bring these skills to youth because, as you so sweetly said, you wish you had known these skills when you were in your early parenting days. And for me, my question is, why do these children need to grow up and be 40 or 50 and have a heart attack or be going through a divorce, which is what I see in my adult classes, before they get these skills?
Why That's right.
can't you teach them to them when they're 8 or 9 or 10? And the data actually shows that we can. So to live the
yes.
majority of your life with these skills in your pocket,
very key. Really important. I mean, and you think about it, world peace does begin at home. And, you know, this is the work we're doing. So when people call in this morning, 1-877-372-KIDS, let our producer know if you'd like to be in this drawing for a free ticket for this wonderful conference next weekend. And at the end of the show, we'll pick someone. Let's take another call now. We have Carol with us from Mill Valley. Good morning, Carol, and thank you for waiting.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Amy and Dr. Rona. I'm calling because I'm a parent of an 8-year-old boy. He has ADHD and Asperger's. And so, I mean, labels aside, he's very anxious and can go really in and out of just his social world. You know, he can be very aware of what's going on. He's extremely bright. He's in the third grade. And then he can really shut down and just react. He'll do things like at school, he has an aide. He's in just a regular public elementary school. And say at school, if there was just an election and he was nominated to be some kind of representative or something, and he didn't get it. And he just reacted, like he yelled, and he wanted to see the votes, and he...
Yes.
And, I mean, a couple years ago in school, he was, you know, throwing chairs and tearing things off the walls, and...
So he's made progress.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And, but, and I don't mean this to, you know, pat myself on the back, but just to relate a little more to... Amy and find out more from her, but I've worked for the last 4 years trying to figure out different ways to help him integrate more, to help him with his anxiety,
yes.
help myself, my daughter. So,
well, Carol, first, I need to stop you there, and I would like to suggest that you do pat yourself on the back, okay? Because it is the effort that you make in yourself and also with your child that is key to his success. It's not that it's all about, you know, what you do isn't going to be all about whether he succeeds or not, but it is key. And so please give yourself credit for that, because you're working hard, and it is, again, contagious as you learn how to breathe and calm yourself. And I also want to say that, you know, schools that I've seen and other schools I've read about with kids with attention problems or learning disabilities or Asperger's, those schools sometimes incorporate mindfulness practices, practices to help kids become aware of their body and their stresses and learning how to reduce that. So I think this is all on the right track. Let me see what Dr. Amy has to say.
Hi. So I think, in the heat of the moment, we can all lose our mindfulness. And so I think the skill building really comes in those calmer, quiet moments. And not to plug my CD, but Rona mentioned it. And doing that at night with your child so that he becomes aware that there is a place of stillness and quietness in him, and that this place of stillness and quietness can, that's where we're able to observe our thoughts and feelings with kindness and curiosity, is from this still, quiet place. And this stillness and quietness can hold our frustration and our upset and our anger. And again, at 8, in the heat of the moment, he may not always be able to access it any more than you and I are always able to access it. And I wanted to say this also to Sarah, which is mindfulness doesn't mean that we're always calm and peaceful.
Not at all.
Wisely. What it means is that I'm aware that I'm really frustrated right now and that I'm having trouble choosing wisely. And that's still a valuable step in the direction that we're heading, just like not throwing chairs is a valuable step in the direction that we're heading. And we need to celebrate, as Rona said, those steps.
Yes, and I think Carol, this is where your son really did accomplish something, because he didn't throw the chairs and he did have his reaction. And I also think, thank you for that, Amy, I also think taking it over, practicing, now that this happened, let's think about what could happen differently next time. Amy, should I send her for an 8-year-old? Should I send her the one for teens or young children of your CDs?
Young children.
Okay.
And the practice that I would use the most is the feelings practice. And one of the things I love to do with that is to have kids afterwards either write a short haiku, and I don't mean the 575, but just what can be said in a breath, or draw a picture of their feelings. Because, again, it's another way for them to get more emotionally fluent. And then they have access to that when it comes up with a brother or a sister, or during the school day. They have access to, oh, this feels familiar, and I know this is a place where it gets a little tricky for me, so I'm going to walk away. I'm going to talk to
right.
the teacher.
It really does take practice, and that's where I want the schools to be doing this more and more as partners with the families, because we need teachers and schools to bringing this into it. So, Carol, that's another thing to think about in terms of helping the schools figure this out. We'll send you a CD, Carol, and let our producer know if you're interested in the conference next weekend, okay? And we'll find a winner at the end of the show.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Okay, thanks.
You're listening to Childhood Matters. Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Hello, my name is Oswaldo, and I'm a longtime listener of Childhood Matters radio program. I'm a father of three, soon to be a grandfather, and I have been listening to Childhood Matters for 8 years. I can call in with my comments or questions, and has been a great resource for me. Throughout the years, Childhood Matters has helped me realize how important it is to interact and listen to your child. And my son, Skyler, has benefited tremendously from the show, and now they need our help. With our support, Childhood Matters can stay on the air and continue helping families. Go to childhoodmatters.org or call 877-372-KIDS to make a donation or find out how you can help.
Well, let's take another call, 1-877-372-KIDS. We're talking with Daniel now from Pacifica. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling, and thank you for waiting.
Yeah, thanks.
So what's your question, Daniel?
I have a 3.5-year-old and 2-year-old, and sometimes I have to watch another child as a baby. And you were talking about taking deep breaths and, you know, slowing it down, but what do you do when you don't have time? What kind of techniques do you do when you don't have time to sit there and take breaths? You just have to, like, you know, you're grabbing one or two kids and the other one's freaking out. You can't make them stop.
When you say freaking out, you mean like having a tantrum?
Yeah. Like, you know, they want something, they can't have it, they don't understand why, and they start crying, and, you know.
That's right. Well, you know, so interesting, Daniel. What I've come to understand, and of course I've had those moments myself, you know, and I understand them perfectly, is taking a slower, deeper breath doesn't really take any time. It just is. It's really about remembering to do it. Because what happens is, you know, our kids are having a tantrum and the energy is going up and everyone's getting overstimulated. And then you're going to react too. And then you're throwing kind of fuel on the fire with the reaction, you know. So if in that moment they're still having a tantrum, if no one's hurting the other person, no one's getting physically damaged, the tantrum can wait a second. It can actually go on a second as long as no one's getting their hair pulled or being knocked over. And it's so interesting to try, and I just encourage you to try it, is to just stand there for a minute and take a few breaths and look around and think for yourself, okay, you know, what do I want to do here? Because that tantrum, what happens is it kind of fuels us and it gets us in a very reactive mode. But it's okay that the child is having a fit, and then you can stop and say, okay, I know you wanted that toy. I would cry too if I couldn't have the toy I wanted. Wow, I think I'll cry too. Whatever you want to do, you know, in the moment, something will come up. But you don't have to immediately in that second fix it. It feels like we have to, but in fact, you don't have to. Amy, what do you think, and how do you help parents with this?
Well, I agree with you that hopefully while we're dealing with the tantrum, we're still breathing. Otherwise, we're going to have bigger problems. And the other thing is you can breathe and either bring awareness to your breath, or you can breathe and move and pick up your child and actually bring mindful awareness to picking up your child. How am I going to grab this mass of kicking, moving arms and legs? What does it feel like when I make contact? How, you know, when my hand touches his skin? What does it feel like when the weight of my child's in my arms? You can bring your full, kind, curious awareness to simply whatever actions you're taking, and that will keep you in the moment, and it will keep you responsive, and you're less likely to be in your head in kind of that panic mode of, oh, my God, what do I do now? You'll be completely there with your child. And then while you're there, as Rona said, what you want to say will come. Whereas if you're kind of in your head freaking out, right, and a little bit disembodied and just thinking about it, then you're more likely to go into old habits of reacting rather than responding.
And I think for you, Daniel, maybe one of the things to try is in that moment, it could be counting to three. One, two, three, breathe. One, two, three, breathe. Or you can come up with like a little mantra that's saying something like, oh, here they are acting their age again. Or something funny, you know, something that you start to practice that brings you back to the place that you can be sometimes when you're calm, because your intensity will only increase their intensity. And some kids really know how to trigger their parents as well. But it's normal for 2-year-olds and 3.5-year-olds and babies to cry and have these tantrums. And part of it is looking around and seeing, what do I need to reduce the stress in the environment? Am I doing what I need to do, or do I need to get more help, or am I, you know, having what I need so I can care for these kids? Great question, Daniel. I don't think I have another CD of Amy's left, but I have something called Juno Baby. It's an amazing CD of music, and I use this sometimes to put on when I don't know what else to do. And we're going to do a show with them next week, but I'm going to send you this CD, and if I have any books around, I'll send them as well. Thank you for calling us.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's take a listen now to what some of the students had to say about learning mindfulness.
Now let's hear what Mina's sixth grade class at Park Day Middle School had to say.
What do you like the most about the mindfulness program in your humanities class?
If you get angry, you can just breathe in and out a couple times. Because my baby brother, he sometimes makes me mad, but I just breathe in and breathe out so I don't go physical on him or anything like that.
When I need some cool off time, when I'm angry or sad or something, I can just go into my zone and meditate and get better.
I like the mind connected to the body method the most because we do it almost every day before classes. And I think it really helps with schoolwork and, yeah, focusing in class.
It really calms me down because I get really stressed about homework a lot. And when I breathe and just take a minute, it really helps me focus more and I can get a lot more done.
I would say, like, just breathing and, like, calming yourself down. I think it just really helps and I just, like, really like it.
It calms me down, but, like, keeps me focused at the same time.
I like that you can calm down when you do it, and it also helps me go to sleep. I do it at least once a day, and I find that I'm a lot calmer
Do you recommend that mindfulness be taught in other schools?
Yeah, I think it would be good in all schools because lots of times kids just get really stressed about homework, but this takes your mind off of it and it makes you have some time to yourself to work it out.
I think it would really help in any school with homework and focusing in class, schoolwork, even if they're not stressed.
Yes. Because usually when we do mindfulness, we're supposed to, like, forget, like, anything that might be bugging us.
Definitely. I find that it really helps us, the whole class, to calm down. And I feel like we're a lot more peaceful in class and there aren't any arguments usually.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Thank you. Thank you to the youth. And I, again, if we can learn these skills when we're young, it's key to living a life. Not to say that we won't be reactive and we won't get angry, but it really gives us the skill to come back, to be able to find our center. And I love that children are learning this at a young age. Joining us now, we've asked to join us for a few minutes here, is Dr. Michelle Bailey. She's the author of Parenting Your Stressed Child, 10 Mindfulness Stress Reduction Practices to Help Your Child Manage Stress and Build Essential Life Skills. And I love her book, and I've been really looking at it as a great way for all parents to help themselves and their children. Dr. Michelle Bailey, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I just say it's a great book. It's easy to read. It's very practical. And you're a physician, a pediatrician. How did you start using this and why?
Well, the work that I do, I would see a lot of kids in my office that really seem to have quite a bit of stress on a day-to-day basis. I think a lot of times we think about big things that may impact kids, such as divorce or a big move, but many of these kids are having day-to-day pressures that largely revolve around school.
Yes.
Yeah. So I started asking kids, what things do you worry about? And I'd get lots of answers from being picked on at school or worried about their grades or stress from an exam, but also some home life stressors. So being concerned about having enough money. Kids are watching the news and they overhear their parents have conversations about being able to pay the bills or make ends meet. And so with that, I would ask, what do you do to make yourself feel better when you're stressed or worried? And some would have pretty good coping skills, such as, you know, reading a book or I'll go outside and play. But I was really concerned about some of the other responses I heard, things like, I'll eat to make myself feel better.
Yes.
Or sometimes just zoning out in front of the television. And so it helped me to realize there was a need to teach kids healthy coping strategies because there's really no formal training for them either in the school system or formalized way that we as parents do that with our kids.
And the fact that you're a pediatrician, you know, I worked in pediatrics for a long time and great pediatricians I work with, but they often didn't take that same approach that you're taking. And I think it's very powerful for a pediatrician to be talking to both the youth about this and then also the parents. Because when we look at something like an obesity epidemic, well, you know, if we're sitting and comforting ourselves with food and TV, that's counterproductive. And it reminds me also to make sure and say that for kids with attention problems or any kid, getting them outdoors in a beautiful environment, just going for a walk or being around trees is another way to increase mindfulness. Dr. Michelle Bailey, we only have a minute left here, but what are you noticing with the results of talking to your patients and the parents about mindfulness?
Well, two really essential things. One is that as kids come back, they report that they're doing this. It's very empowering. It's a skill that they can learn in 1 or 2 minutes in the office and with regular practice, be able to put it into place on a day-to-day basis. So they're becoming more responsive to their stress instead of reactive. And that's really the key. But the second biggest thing is that parents are learning this as well. And so I instruct both the children and the parents in the office. And as parents practice this, they're better able to manage their own stress and be better role models for their kids.
And, you know, Dr. Amy, this is what you say, that you love it when you can work with both the parent and the child.
Right. And one thing that I wanted to emphasize, because I don't think we got to it before, is that the data that I have from my research at Stanford actually shows that we talked about the data for the parents, so I'm not going to go over that again, but for the kids, the data shows that when they practice mindfulness, they have increased ability to orient their attention and decreased anxiety. And then the written comments from my students sound very much like the written comments from the spoken comments from the students at Park Day School, better able to deal with anger, stress, homework, feeling more peaceful and calm.
Yes.
So we actually now have good data to, scientific research to show that this is beneficial.
And I think Dr. Michelle Bailey and Dr. Amy Saltzman, you should meet each other sometime because you're doing...
Hi, Amy.
Oh, you do? Oh, good. Well, you're doing similar work, and I love that you're doing this in a pediatric practice, Michelle Bailey, and I'd love to make sure parents know about your book, and it's called Parenting Your Stressed Child. Have a wonderful day, Michelle, and maybe you can join us sometime for a whole show.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take Bye-bye. Good care. You know, Amy, we're starting to wrap up the show now. Maybe you can give us some final words about what you think is some of the takeaways from today's show and the work you're doing.
Yeah, so I think the takeaways are that this is a very learnable, practicable skill, and you want to bring the same kindness and curiosity to learning this skill that we've been discussing throughout the show, so that you don't use it as another way to beat yourself up. And we are really demonstrating that there are proven benefits for children, teens, parents, teachers, healthcare providers, and if you look at the broader mindfulness research, really across professions, across settings, this is proving to be a useful and beneficial skill that has people feel less stressed, anxious, depressed, less likely to engage in harmful behaviors, whether it's sitting in front of the couch eating or more dramatic behaviors that we see sometimes in our teenagers, and to lead more peaceful, healthy, compassionate, engaged lives.
That's right. That's right. And again, you can start today. I remember my son, Matt, taught me a STAR method, which was stop, think, act, reflect. So there are lots of simple ways to start thinking of how you can do this. Just stopping, breathing, thinking. And there are great books out there. Amy's website. Amy, what's your website?
StillQuietPlace.com.
StillQuietPlace.com. And I'd like to give Carol from Mill Valley a pass to go to the conference. So we'll send that to you, Carol. I hope you can make it. Let Felsha know. And again, check out the website, StillQuietPlace.com. And also there's a website for Gina Bailey, and hers is StressTeens.com. And we have some of her CDs as well for teens. So if you're the parent of a teen, send us an email at info@childhoodmatters.org and we'll send you one of those CDs as well. Amy Saltzman, thank you so much for joining us. And I look forward to coming to see you next week at the conference. And keep up the wonderful work.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thanks to our producers, Felsha Zuschlag and Lorenza Plazzola at the controls. And my deep gratitude to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina, and my husband, Mick. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week. Spend time with your child, breathe, and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media. Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.